chapter 2, the first section, verses 1 to 10. At the end of this chapter, Prabhupada writes in the last purport, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has summarized this second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as being the contents for the whole text. So the first chapter is more or less just setting the scene. Second chapter is an introduction to the contents. In the Bhagavad Gita, the subject matters are Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. In the second chapter, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga have been clearly discussed, or will be clearly discussed. And a glimpse of Bhakti Yoga has also been given as the contents of the complete text. So, this chapter, especially this chapter, deals with, in the next section, the basics, the basis of Krishna consciousness, and also the basis upon which Krishna will dismantle Arjuna's arguments, and the basis upon which spiritual instruction is founded, if you like. It's the foundation. Very often in your preaching, you will find that, or I find anyway, if you haven't got anything to say, then the first thing you should say is you're not the body, you're a spirit soul. Because, you know, most people don't understand that. Even if they do, even if we do understand it, then we don't often act on it. Huh? So, this chapter teaches us self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul. That's stated by Prabhupada right in the beginning of the first purport, which we will read. This realization comes when one works without attachment to fruity results and is situated in a fixed conception of the real self. Krishna chastises Arjuna for his stance of non-violence, calling him impotent and non-Aryan. So he's sort of saying you're weak and you're not advanced. Not advanced. And then Arjuna argues again that it's simple. It's simple to kill your superiors. But then after that he realizes he's confused. And then he says, I don't really know what I should be doing. And then, very importantly, he surrenders to Krishna. And so the relationship's changing. The discussion is not going to be based on friendship, a discussion amongst friends, but importantly, and not that one shouldn't be friendly with one spiritual master, but the relationship is deepened, if you like, and it becomes more serious in that Arjuna inquires from Krishna as a disciple would inquire from one's spiritual master. Kapanya dosho pahata svabhava prichchami. What is it? Prichchami from dharma samudha chetasa. You should be learning this sloka, huh? Yeah, this is one of the kids' slokas. That's how come I'm learning it too. Teaching Lalita. Although I actually already know it. Yatsrayas tan nishchitam bruhi tan me sisyaste ham sadi mam tvam prapanam. I am now a soul surrendered unto you. Tvam prapanam. To you I am surrendered. So, it's interesting. There's some there's quite a bit of nectar in this little, these 10 verses here, so I'm not sure if we're going to be able to extract all of the juice out of it. We'll see, we'll try. Actually, it's impossible to extract all the juice out of it because it's unlimited. The Bhagavad Gita is described in the introduction as, what is it? Arjuna is the calf. Does anyone remember that? What does it say? It says
that the cows are like Upanishads, and Krishna is the milker of the cow.
Yes.
And Arjuna is
the calf.
And
What's the cow representative of?
The Upanishads.
The Upanishads. That's right. Yes, the cow is representative of the Upanishads. And the Bhagavad Gita is one of the Upanishads.
I think that's actually from Gita Mahārāja, spoken of.
Yes. Yeah, and it's interesting. The Upanishads are considered to be like the headlines of the Vedas, Prabhupada says. The headlines of the Vedas. If you're giving an argument in spiritual circles and you quote from the Upanishads, that's it, finished. Your argument has won. That's how you establish your argument, by quoting from the Upanishads. This is why the Bhagavad Gita is so important, because of Gita Upanishad. It's got the headlines, the main points, the essential points are contained within the Upanishads. So this is the essential essence, and especially in the second chapter is the essence of spiritual understanding, which is juxtaposed, if you like, in the first chapter to Arjuna's misunderstanding. Right? This is a very important point, because the second chapter balances out the confusion that Arjuna is feeling based on ignorance, and that will be a misconception. The first verse says, Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed. Right? His eyes full of tears. Madhusudana, Krishna, spoke the following words. Prabhupada says, material compassion, lamentation and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. So, this is underlining Arjuna's compassion, right? He's saying, oh, I don't want to see others suffer. I don't want to suffer myself. I don't want to suffer myself. But what about my friends, family and so forth? Compassion for the eternal soul is self-realization. This is the definition of self-realization. Compassion for the soul. And so this is what it balances out, or it counteracts Arjuna's compassion, which actually was based on a bodily conception. The word Madhusudana is significant in this verse. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu, and now Arjuna wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that had overtaken him in the discharge of his duty. No one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man fallen in the ocean of nescience cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a Shudra, or one who laments unnecessarily. Arjuna was a Kshatriya, and this conduct was not expected from him. Lord Krishna, however, can dissipate the lamentation of the ignorant man, and for this purpose the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. So Arjuna is the emblem, if you like, of ignorance, because he's not, because he's a great devotee, but for this purpose, for the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita, he's playing in the role of somebody who's just ordinarily conditioned. There are symptoms later on, even in this section, which demonstrate that Arjuna wasn't an ordinary person, but for the purposes of acting on the stage of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he's presenting as a person in ignorance. Lord Krishna, however, could dissipate the lamentation of the ignorant man, and for this purpose the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. This chapter instructs us, here we go, this chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul as explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible when one works without attachment, the fruited results, and is situated in a fixed conception of the real self. What does that mean?
Karma yoga.
What does that mean?
Karma yoga.
Karma yoga. Yes. But what does that, that may be true. But what does it mean? Lord Sri, those two sentences. This chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul as explained by the Supreme Authority. What does that mean?
Differentiating between matter and spirit.
Yes.
And it is detachment and knowledge which will lead to self-realization.
Yes. What else? Can we read it again? I know it's a bit hard, it's Thursday. It's not very hard, I just want you to tell me what it means. No tricks. No smoke, no mirrors.
Understand the difference between the Jiva and Krishna?
The Jiva and...
Krishna?
No, listen to this. This chapter instructs us... we've got correct answers right so far. There's a little bit more of information. This chapter instructs us in self-realization by an This chapter instructs us in self-realization by an analytical study of the material body and the spirit soul, as explained by the Supreme Authority, Lord Sri Krishna. What does that mean? In your own words, something you'd like to say?
Yes, we understand is, what is the nature of the material body, what's the nature of the soul.
Yes.
And this instruction has been given by Lord Sri Krishna.
That's right.
Be self-realized.
Yeah.
By that study, then you can understand what true self is.
Yes.
It's just saying like Lord Krishna has explained like the spirit soul and the matter are different.
Yes.
They're not one.
Yes. Yeah, it's really simple. That's why this chapter is so important, because it tells us what's the body, what's the spirit soul, and it's authoritative because it's been taught to us by Krishna. You should change your battery. So much for that idea. Can't rely on our computer anymore. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. A little bit harder. We got the code karma yoga, which is not wrong, but may not mean a lot to us. In your own words, somebody. Does anybody know what that sentence means? Anybody?
It's not only analyzing the previous line, but it's also begin practice.
To serve the Lord.
One has to serve. Yeah. It doesn't actually say that, but yes, why not?
First is the theoretical understanding, and second is the practical application. So if you theoretically understand that you are not the body or the soul, and then you practically apply that, and you come to the conclusion that
yes, very good. You can realize it when you work without attachment. And in working without attachment, what do you have to do?
Understand why not the body.
Yes, understand who you are. Fixed conception of the real self, that you're not the body, that you're a spirit soul. In the first edition of the Bhagavad Gita, that sentence was actually gobbledygook. And if anybody could have worked out what it meant, then they would have been experts in gobbledygook. But it does make sense. Now it does make sense. It looked like the editor had fallen asleep halfway through the sentence. They woke up and put something else in at the end. Things like that did happen in those days. So there's an analogy in here that Prabhupada uses quite a bit. The analogy of the man and his coat. Right? Just like I came down to give class and I brought with me my glasses case. But then when I opened up my glasses case, then my glasses weren't in it. So I had to walk back down home to get my glasses. So Arjuna's misconception was he was concerned about the physical well-being of his family. But Krishna's going to tell him, that's not the point. The point is you have to be concerned about the spiritual welfare and well-being of the family. And the only way that you could be concerned about the spiritual welfare, the real welfare of everybody, is if you're able to see from a spiritual perspective. You've got to see from the spiritual perspective, not the material perspective. You know, just offering respects to your grandfather and to your teacher without considering what they've actually done, right? This is the point. What has that person done to you? It's all right to be respectful, and it's good to be respectful, it comes up later on, for your elders and so forth. But if they're acting in a way which is detrimental for the well-being of everybody, something has to be done about it, based on a spiritual understanding. Next verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead... back to that example. So Prabhupada put emphasis on this example of, you know, lifesaver. The lifesaver swims out. Everybody used to do this as a play, a street drama. One of the devotees would make out that he's drowning in the middle of Birch Street Mall. And see, one time the devotees took Korma in a pram with a nappy on and a pair of gumboots. I can't remember what the play was all about. But anyway, they used to, in order to attract attention to themselves, they used to do interesting things just to stop people on the street. So one of the devotees would make out that he's drowning in the middle of the world. And then one of the devotees would swim out, the lifesaver would swim out, and they'd have him dressed up in such a way so that he'd be struggling in the water, and then he'd pull his coat off and he'd come swimming back with the coat and say, I've got him. Meanwhile, the devotee who was drowning, he's still drowning. You know, and street theatre in those days was sort of like new and exciting. People would take notice. And then when they finished the play, then one of the devotees would get up and give an explain that saving the coat is like looking after the body but not taking care of the spirit soul. What's another example that Prabhupada would give to illustrate this point?
The bird in the cage.
You've got a polished cage, fresh litter, a nice mirror, a cuttlefish bone, so you can sharpen up his beak. But you haven't fed him, so the poor old bird's on the floor, dead. And of course, modern society is like that. No interest in the spirit soul, simply interested in decorating the body, which in and of itself is dead anyway. So this is an interesting point. And of course, it illustrates the point that Arjuna was interested more in looking after the coat and not after the person, if you like. Or more interested in the bodily relations, family relations, and other sort of moralistic situations, considerations, rather than looking at it from the spiritual point of view. Because he wasn't looking at it from the spiritual point of view, then what did that create? If we're not looking at things from the spiritual point of view, What does it create?
Bewilderment.
Bewilderment, yes. Confusion.
Anxiety.
Yes, anxiety. Perplexity, yeah.
Frustration.
Material compassion, lamentation, and tears. The bird. The bird's come back alive. Can you put the bird to sleep? Still out the car. Excellent.
My bird's not asleep either.
Material compassion, lamentation, and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. So this is a good example. The bird in the cage, or in this case, the dress of a drowning man. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. Prabhupada had a really powerful way of turning words into a very short sentence, full of meaning. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a sudra, or one who laments unnecessarily, which comes up in the next verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kutastva Kashmalamidam Vishame Samapastitam Anarya Jushtam Asvargyam Akirti Karamarjuna. This kind of mentality, this kind of understanding is the understanding of the Anarya, or the person is not advanced.
Non-believer
of the Vedas. Yeah. The Supreme Personality of God, they said, my dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to help higher planets, but to infamy. Now, it's interesting in this purport. It's a long purport. Prabhupada talks about the three conceptions of the absolute truth. What is it? Vedanti tat bhavidas jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabdite. He talks about the three aspects of the absolute truth: Brahman, the Paramatma, and Bhagavan. What does he use as an example to illustrate these three?
The sun
planet, and the sun god.
Prabhupada also gives the example of a mountain which is very far away.
Not in here, but
one Prabhupada instrument, Tirupati or something, he saw a hill from.
Yes, that's from Goswami. Jiva Goswami, I think, is that in the Sandhava, is that example also. Yeah. There's the cloud on top of the mountain, there's the mountain itself, and then there's the personalities of performing activities on the mountain. Right? So in the distance you may see, oh, look, there's a mountain, because you can see the cloud. And then when you come up close you can see, yes, oh, look, here's the mountain. But if you come up even closer to the mountain, you'll see, oh, look, there's activities on the mountain. But similarly also, the sunshine is the Brahman realization, which is likened to, if you like, the understanding of the Brahma Jyoti, Brahman. And then the Paramatma feature is likened to the sun planet. And then Bhagavan is the sun god, and one really then understands the sun fully if one understands the activity of the sun god, because along with the sun god comes the globe of the sun, And then also the sun's rays. But understanding of the personality of Godhead is not the same as, say, the understanding of the sun's rays, even though they're the same, as is mentioned here in this verse. Tattvam yajjnanam advayam. Advayam means there's no duality. The Brahman realization is spiritual. The Bhagavan realization is spiritual. The Paramatma realization is spiritual. But knowing the Brahman doesn't mean you automatically understand Bhagavan. Right? Although understanding Bhagavan means you understand Brahman and Paramatma, understanding of Brahman and Paramatma doesn't mean automatically an understanding of Bhagavan. Right? Why, here's a question, why does Prabhupada mention this example here when Krishna is chastising Arjuna for being uncultured? In this verse, why is there such a long, why does Prabhupada talk about for 2 pages at least the personality of Godhead, and then at the end he talks about the contents of the verse? Why does he do that? Yes, because he wants to establish the importance of listening to Krishna. Right? That we're not just listening to anybody here, because this is the first time that Krishna speaks effectively, although it's mentioned in the third person, is it? That Krishna speaks to Arjuna in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where he says, you know, behold the armies. But that's Sanjaya saying, that's what Krishna said. But here, we've got Krishna directly speaking, if you like. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. So in order to establish the importance of hearing from Krishna, Prabhupada says who Krishna really is. He's the source of everything. He's the source of all of the incarnations. He's the source of the whole creation. Knowledge coming from him is absolute, so therefore we should hear this transcendental science from Krishna. Because hearing from Krishna is transcendental. Hearing from anybody else may not be. Unless they happen to be repeating what Krishna says. A classic quotation. Ishvaraha Parama Krishna Sakti Ananda Vigraha Anadi Adi Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Everybody should know that verse. That's a classic verse to establish the supremacy of the personality of Godhead, because it says directly Ishvaraha Parama Krishna. You can't get any more direct than that statement, really. The supreme controller is Krishna. So it's nice that Prabhupada establishes Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he is the source of all incarnations, he's the source of all of the creation, nothing existed before him, so therefore he must know what he's talking about. As I mentioned the other day, you know, if Krishna is just an ordinary, if we're all one, and we're as good as Krishna and Krishna is as good as us, then there's no real point in hearing from Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita, which just smashes the idea of the impersonal idea that we're all one. God's, Krishna's mind, we're one, we're all together. If that's the case, then why is he conditioned like us? He's not conditioned like us. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although it's interesting, when Krishna appears, he looks like us. He acts as if he isn't just an ordinary person. But that's just a show, if you like. And we see that as we're studying in the Bhagavatam. In the 10th canon of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you see how Krishna's not an ordinary person at all. He's got so many girlfriends, 16,108 wives. You know, who can do that. Expansions, and of course this is, it makes it difficult for people to appreciate Krishna, you know, because it's, oh, 16,108 was, how's that possible? He's expanded himself 16,108 times. Ah, nobody can do that. Well, not you or I, you can't do it. Well, no, definitely you can't, nor I. But because he is the Supreme Personality of God, and therefore he can do it. Therefore we listen to him. Prabhupada says here, he's established the supremacy of Krishna, and that we should accept Krishna's authority, and then acting on his authority and his instructions, we should behave properly. We should behave correctly. Krishna's telling us what the standard of behaviour is, based on the spiritual conception of life. And so, Arjuna's behaviour is a bit of a surprise. Prabhupada says here, the word Aryan, this is at the last paragraph of the second purple, purple of the second verse. The word Aryan is applicable to persons who know the value of life and have a civilization based on spiritual realization. Persons who are led by the material conception of life do not know that the aim of life is realization of the absolute truth, Vishnu or Bhagavan, and they are captivated by the external features of the material world. Right, the real purpose of life is to beat the Italians at football. And the trouble is they won. Huh? And actually the real purpose of life will be to beat the English at cricket this summer. This is our culture. This is the culture that we're living in. But this is a material conception of life. You know, that I am the body. I am the doer. Kartaham iti manyate. This is the materialistic conception. I am the doer. Kartaham means I'm the doer. But the Vimudhatma, Krishna says. Not just the mudha, but Vimudha. This is a very big fool, things like this. Right? Unfortunately, you know, material society, the culture that we live in is very sophisticated, and so we get bewildered by that sophistication sometimes. And so we think, oh yes, everybody, they've got everything much, much better, much more together than me or than us. But actually, Krishna puts it all in perspective. No, that kind of thinking is actually foolish. Even regardless of how polished it is, how technologically advanced, if it's based on a material conception, then actually it's just, they're fools. They are captivated by the external features of the material world, and therefore they do not know what liberation is. Persons who have no knowledge of liberation from material bondage are called non-Aryans. Although Arjuna was a Kshatriya, he was deviating from his prescribed duties by declining to fight. This act of cowardice is described as befitting the non-Aryans. Such deviation from duty does not help one in the progress of spiritual life, nor does it even give one the opportunity to become famous in this world. Lord Krishna did not approve of the so-called compassion of Arjuna for his kinsmen. Right, pretty straightforward. O son of Prita, this is text 3, do not yield to this degrading impetus. So he says, you're not advanced, and not only that, you're a weakling. Right? It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. Parantapa means conqueror of the enemy. Of which Arjuna had already been doing for, you know, so many pastimes. He had been victorious. He conquered even the most powerful of the demigods. Huh? Lord Shiva. Yeah. So, you know, Arjuna wasn't behaving according to the Aryan system, which is designed for progressive development of the spirit soul. It's okay for the brahmanas to be merciful, right? That's the duty of the brahmanas. They can be merciful and forgive. But Arjuna is a kshatriya, and so therefore as a kshatriya he has to fight. And when a kshatriya kills somebody, That's for their benefit, right? So sorry, when a murderer is punished, it's for the murderer's benefit if he's hung. It's not because they like to see people suffer or get pleasure from that, but rather they know. This person has performed sinful activities in this lifetime. He's killed somebody, he has to get the reaction for that, which means he'll be killed. So let him be killed now. That will be for his benefit. He's then purified of that reaction, and then he can go on to a purified state in his next birth. Not a pure state necessarily, but a purified state from the previous birth. So, Krishna's being a little hard on Arjuna here, actually, in one sense. It appears he's being a bit hard, harsh, if you like. But it's a bit like sometimes, and the Kshatriya's duty is like this also. Sometimes a parent has to chastise a child. Right? Do you chastise your daughter?
Sometimes.
Not very often. Huh? Sometimes. Very rarely. But sometimes we do. We have to chastise our children. Do we do it because we like to pick on our kids? Our children think we're picking on them. Huh? What are you picking on me for? I didn't do anything. Huh? But the parent knows for the benefit of the child has to be sometimes, you know, firm dealings. So Krishna is also dealing firmly. It said Krishna is very, very soft, or he can be very, very hard. Right? But always that hardness is meant for the benefit of the devotee. It's meant for the benefit of the devotee. And also for Arjuna. His killing of these other personalities is ultimately for their benefit, surprisingly enough. They have performed simple activities. They're trying to usurp the throne, which would mean bringing in an irreligious system, basically. And that won't benefit the people. Neither will it benefit them. They'll just be engaged in simple activities. And that will actually degrade everybody. So Arjuna's fighting is ultimately going to be for the benefit of everybody. Even though initially it appears as if there's going to be some unpalatable action, if you like. Right? And of course, usually we go for, you know, our initial consideration in performing an action is it going to be good for me right now? Mm-hmm. Right? If it's good for me right now, I'll do it. And this is the premise of most of modern society's behaviour. Whereas, you know, a parent understands. Chastisement of the child may be painful for the child now, but it'll teach it good character, educate them properly, discipline them properly so that in the future they'll have good character. Right? So it's for the long-term benefit.
If I could just ask a question regarding that.
Yeah.
It's interesting to note that Arjuna is one of his reasons for not fighting.
Yes.
He says, why do we have to replace the rulership when the kingdom is being administered quite well right now?
Yes.
Does that, I mean, obviously it doesn't refer to spiritual progress, it refers to material progress.
Yes. And Arjuna was being chastised by Krishna because he wasn't looking at the long-term spiritual benefit of people, he was just looking at the material, the external. Yes, externally it looks like it's all being organised properly, but what are the underlying motivations of these people? They've stolen your kingdom. That's irreligious activity. They've tried to steal your wife, expose her in public. That's irreligious activity. Huh? That's not for the benefit of everybody. Arjuna, it's mentioned in here, Arjuna didn't want to see the suffering, the immediate suffering, because he's a devotee and he's soft-hearted, he has that compassion. But looking at it from a spiritual point of view, you know, sometimes it just has to be punishment. Right? So, you know, yes, it may be managed properly, but long-term it's not ultimately for the spiritual benefit. Material benefit may be there now, but it's not for the long-term spiritual benefit, so therefore something should be done for long-term spiritual benefit. Arjuna said, is that right? Text 4. Okay, yeah, so Krishna said, Do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart. So it's basically saying, you're not an Aryan. You're a chicken. Huh? Chicken. Do they call people chicken in India? No? If you want to taunt somebody, so you say to them, chicken. Usually when you wanted somebody to do something, it wasn't very good for them in any case, you know. So what's wrong with you? You're a chicken. Text 4. Arjuna said, O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counteract with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? Well, that's ironic, because really what Arjuna is saying is they are not worthy of your worship. Maybe previously, but not now. Huh? And as Prabhupada pointing out here, Arjuna is saying, you know, would you kill your grandfather? Madhu Sujana, you're the killer of the demon Madhu, but would you kill your grandfather? Would you kill Sandipani Muni, your guru? Probably not. So he's, you know, it will be better to live in this world by begging. So this is interesting. Prabhupada mentions Arjuna is such a great devotee, self-controlled. He's prepared to give up his duty as a chakra and just go and live as a beggar. He says this is actually a good qualification. Gurun ahatva hi mahanubhavan. We shouldn't kill superiors like our guru and mahanubhavan, great souls. Better to go and live as a beggar. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superior. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. So even if they've lost their respectability as teachers, they still should be respected. You know, we were discussing this the other day about a wife being chaste to the husband. You can see this principle in Vedic culture of still maintaining you could say it was the facade. In most sense, you could say that, trying to keep the integrity of the culture in place, because the basic principle of respecting authority is so valid and so valuable for making spiritual advancement, right? It has to be there. You have to accept the instructions of Krishna. You have to accept the instructions of the spiritual master. You have to accept the instructions of one's authorities. Now, text 6. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. So Arjuna is still arguing here, these persons, we should be respectful to them. It's sinful for killing respectable persons. But then he says, but actually I don't know which is better. So here we have indecision again, more indecision. Conquering them or being conquered by them. If we killed the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield. So we can see how Arjuna is such a saintly person. He's concerned about the welfare of everybody. He's not interested in fighting and unnecessarily killing. He might fight. He's saying here, I'm not sure what the great thing to do. Fight and kill them or be conquered by them. Because there's always a possibility that you could lose also. Now I am confused. And here's this verse. Famous verse. It's in this purport here actually. Here's where Prabhupada says. It's interesting. His desire to live by begging, although he was born in the royal household, is another sign of detachment. He was detached. He was truly virtuous. Because, you know, that was his concern beforehand. Oh, I don't want to fight just for the kingdom. Huh? So it's quite detached. He was truly virtuous. As these qualities combined with his faith in the words of instruction of Sri Krishna, his spiritual master, indicate. It is concluded that Arjuna is quite fit for liberation. And here's an interesting, here's a very important point Prabhupada makes here. Unless the senses are controlled, there is no chance of elevation to the platform of knowledge. And without knowledge and devotion, there is no chance of liberation. Arjuna was confident in all these attributes over and above his enormous attributes in his material relationships.
So, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Because in Bhagavad Gita, they say every shloka is important.
Yeah.
Then why again this invitation?
They're all important, but some are more important than others.
That's true. But why again all those, the lamentations of Arjuna being repeated here? In fact, they could have just, with the shloka,
Should we have a chat with Sanjay about this?
Okay.
How come the Bhagavad Gita's got all this lamentation in it?
Maybe some reasons why it's being...
No, it was emphasis. It's emphasizing Arjuna's plight.
In shlokas it has been emphasized.
Sorry?
The previous 10 shlokas have been emphasized.
Yes, but that's, you know, emphasis is important sometimes to make a point obvious. The Vedas are very, three or five, some verses you find something repeated 6 times. Sorry?
Arjuna's giving different reasons.
They're all different reasons, yeah, that's not all lamentation, but it's all symptomatic of lamentation, right? But there's all different reasons there. What have we got? I might be happy, we should be compassionate to others. Yeah, we'll get simple reactions.
Respectful to elders.
Yeah, respect. Well, maintaining the family, tradition, right? And the fact he's just indecisive. He doesn't know what he should do. Which Prabhupada says here, this is a good qualification of somebody to turn to Krishna. Right? In fact, this is what material existence does to anybody. It puts you in a state of stupidity. Right? But everybody ultimately should be turning to a spiritual teacher, a representative of Krishna. A bit tired, huh? Thursday night's a tough one. How's the time going?
Quarter to nine.
Can we start later or what?
No.
Not really. We only got halfway. Now we're going to have to come back and do some more. Okay. We might not do any work. We might not do any group work. Because I want to go to bed early. Is that being compassionate or is that the bodily concept of life? I think we should stay up all night. That's why I would say emphasis on this point, because Arjuna is a Kshatriya. He's a Kshatriya. Krishna is his friend. He's called Gudakesh, which means, free from ignorance. And yet he's obviously showing signs of confusion. So it's really the springboard for the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita. Right? It's the launching point from which the Bhagavad Gita is spoken. And Krishna analyzes all of these arguments and defeats them. And as Atul Krishna mentioned to me yesterday before, that in the Bhagavad Gita, actually, the different darshans, 6 darshans, are defeated, or shall we say analyzed, and then the bhakti perspective is given in the Bhagavad Gita. Right. So there's different arguments that that Arjuna is giving are then going to be dismantled later on by Krishna as the work proceeds, as the discussion proceeds. Right. So Arjuna is giving different points, right, as part of his lamentation, and then through the Bhagavad Gita, it's being dealt with in a very systematic way and in a very thorough way, so that you know, the whole range of Vedic philosophy, or the different Vedic philosophies that exist other than the Vedanta Darshan, they're covered and defeated, if you like, analyzed and defeated, I guess we could say defeated, covered, I would say. Kapanya doto pahata sababa prichami tam dharma samu. I think this verse is one of the verses that you must learn and will be tested on. Right? Does that make sense? Must learn, will be tested. Kapanya doto pahata sababa prichami tam dharma samu dhetasa. Yatshreyas tan nisti tan bruhi tan me Sisyaste ham sari mam pham papanam. I learned that verse about 27 years ago. But it looks like I need to do a bit of a revision. Sisyaste ham, I am your disciple, please instruct me. Sisya steham means I am your disciple. Sadi, just instruct mam, me. Tvam, unto you, prapanam, I am surrendered. This is a very, this is an essential element of spiritual life. Being surrendered to one's spiritual master. By nature's own way, the complete system of material activities, and here's this underlining this point, by nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. Right? When you're in material existence, what happens? You become perplexed. Confused. Right? Perplexion means confused. If we weren't confused, there wouldn't be any need to ask anybody anything, right? We wouldn't need to go to Krishna and find out. What do I need to do? In every step, there is perplexity. And therefore, it behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can give one proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. All Vedic literatures advise us to approach a bona fide spiritual master to get free from the perplexities of life, which happen without our desire. They are like a forest fire that somehow blazes without being set by anyone. Similarly, the world situation is such that perplexities of life automatically appear without our wanting such confusion. Anybody who doesn't have any problems with confusion? No one wants fire and yet it takes place. We become perplexed. Why? Why? The Vedic therefore advises that in order to solve the perplexities of life and to understand the science of the solution, one must approach a spiritual master who is in a disciplic succession. Interesting, right? A spiritual, not just anybody who says they're a spiritual master, but somebody who's authorized. A person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. What does that mean? This is one of those sentences out of the Bhagavad Gita that intrigues me every time I read it. What does that mean? A person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. Okay. In devotees, what does it mean there? You should know everything. You all know everything?
It means the very fact that you have taken a spiritual master itself means that you got the key for the answer. You may not have gone inside the room, but you got the key. means you got the spiritual consciousness.
See, a person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. Sorry? Yes, and what did Prabhupada say?
He knows what the spiritual master knows.
He knows what the spiritual master knows. Okay. Does that mean, you know, if you're supposed to know everything, that means I know what you're all thinking now? You're supposed to know the knower of everything? What, because you know the knower of everything, then you know everything?
No, you're supposed to inquire all your doubts to a spiritual master. When you know Krishna through spiritual master, so when you come to understanding that Krishna is everything, then you
know everything. Oh, I like that. That sounds reasonable. That makes sense. They don't call him guru for nothing. Okay, what do you think? That's what you're going to say. Okay. Great minds think alike.
Prabhu, can you repeat what he said? I didn't quite hear.
Can you repeat what he said, Guru?
Like, when you have the spiritual master, by that way you know that Krishna is the supreme personality. That you come to understand. As it said, if you know Krishna, then you know everything.
Yeah, if you know Krishna, Krishna is everything, so therefore you know everything. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I see a few smiles on the faces. He gets approval. Yeah, because Krishna is everything. If you know Krishna, then you know everything. In other words, you know, even though you may present yourself as a fool, you should not act as a fool. You should be... One should not therefore remain in material perplexities, but should approach a spiritual master. This is the purpose of this. Very important. Approaching a spiritual master, following his guidance. I think I've mentioned this before, but I've heard classes, A class certainly, where Prabhupada says the most important verse of the Bhagavad Gita is chapter 4, text 34. Which is tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upatekshyantite jnanam jnanina stattvadasanaha. One should approach a spiritual master with three qualifications. One should be humble, submissive. One should inquire, and then one should do service. Very important if you want to make progress in spiritual life. I suspect all my objects are sort of not following the instructions of the spiritual master, I suspect. We think we are, but if we analyse things very, very closely, we see we've created our own process. So here's the change. This is a pivotal point in the text of the Bhagavad Gita, because now Krishna is going to instruct Arjuna. That comes in the 10th verse. Tamuvacha Harishikesha Prahasan. He's smiling. Krishna's smiling now because he's pleased that Arjuna has just like, and Prabhupada gives the example, his mother sometimes smiles at the distress of the child and when the child turns to the father. Not because he likes to see his child in distress, but because the child is seeking shelter. Huh? I can find no means, and then Prabhupada talks about who's in material perplexity. Huh? Who is in material perplexity? Please raise your hands. Okay, that's us. And to solve the problem, one has to turn to the authorized teacher. I can find no means to drive away this grief which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it, even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth. Sorry, let me go ahead. So it's interesting. Arjuna is admitting that his material approach, if you like, wasn't sufficient. and he needs instruction on a spiritual platform. I'm not seeing things from the right perspective. Please instruct me. Huh? Prabhupada mentioned some really nice statements in his purports. He could understand that his so-called knowledge was useless in driving away his problems, and in the purport, text 8. And it was impossible for him to solve such perplexities without the help of a spiritual master like Lord Krishna. Academic knowledge, scholarship, high position, etc. are all useless in solving the problems of life. Help can be given only by a spiritual master like Krishna. So the conclusion is that a spiritual master who is 100% Krishna conscious is a bona fide spiritual master, for he can solve the problems of life. And here's a very important point. Regardless of one's social position, Kiba Vipra, Kiba Nyasi, Sudra Kene Noi, Ye Krishna Tattva Veda Sei Guru Hoi. Kiba Vipra, whether they're a Brahmana, Kiba Nyasi, Sannyasi, Sudra Kene Noi, or it can be a Sudra. It's very interesting. Lord Chaitanya took the highest instruction from Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy is considered to be a Sudra, Kayasta. Not even a Kshatriya. Not even a Kshatriya, practically speaking, according to the caste system of that time. Practically speaking, like a Sudra. That was his social position. But because Ramananda Roy was such an elevated and advanced devotee, then Lord Chaitanya was teaching, Lord Chaitanya is the Brahmana and a Sannyasi, which means he's at the top of society in terms of, any Vedic social, ladder, climbing the social ladder, right? Lord Chaitanya was at the top. He should have been giving instructions to Ramananda Roy. But Lord Chaitanya was teaching, no, I'll take instructions from the advanced devotee. Ramananda Roy was the governor of... Well, then there's this other one. A scholarly Brahmana, expert in all subjects of Vedic knowledge, is unfit to become a spiritual master without being a Vaishnava. Or expert in the science of Krishna consciousness. Whereas, a person born in a family of a lower caste can become a spiritual master if he is a Vaishnava or Krishna conscious. Right, let's just finish this off now. Sanjaya Vacha. Sanjaya said, having spoken thus, Arjuna, chastiser of enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight, and fell silent. It's interesting what Prabhupada says here in the third book. Sanjaya is relating all of this to Dhritarashtra, so Prabhupada says, Dhritarashtra must have been fairly happy. This is good. But, again, he makes the point, actually, this should have been a cause of great concern for Dhritarashtra, because this now means that he's about to be enlightened by Arjuna, and that means that in not a very short distance in time, he's going to start fighting. Which is sort of what Dhritarashtra wanted. Actually, he did want them to fight. But he wanted Duryodhana to be the winner. And of course, there are all other indications that show us that actually Duryodhana and his brothers and friends are not going to be the winners. Last verse, O descendant of Bharata, at that time Krishna smiling in the midst of both parties. No. Previously, the talk was going on between intimate friends, Hrishikesh and Gudakesh, but now that Arjuna is asking Krishna to accept the higher position of the spiritual master, and Krishna has happily accepted that role. And of course, we go now into the pure, we can't say that the other is not pure, but Krishna now will give the essence, if you like, of the Bhagavad Gita, the basic foundational principles of spiritual life, that you're not the body, that you're spirit soul. And so Prabhupada mentioned, master with gravity as it is required. And not only that, Prabhupada says here, it appears that the talk between a master and a disciple was for everybody's benefit because everybody could hear it, right? So this is something for everybody. Alright, there were other things and I wanted to do a bit of an exercise, but there's so much. It's really interesting actually, there is so much in the Bhagavad Gita. And we haven't covered all of those, everything that's in there, but... Anybody have any comments or questions? Yes, continue.
What could be Krishna's answer if Arjuna would have asked that they are all your children and they are all...
They are all your children.
How can you kill them? How can you kill them?
Yeah. Well, the thing is though that sometimes in a family, some of the sons behave and some misbehave. And so the dad has to work out a way to chastise the misbehaving one. And sometimes that means that the one lot of sons has to rectify the other.
So why did Krishna took the bow not to fight? Why did not he himself go and
fight? Why didn't Krishna fight?
Yeah.
Why didn't he fight? Anybody know the answer to that question?
He wants to give you... Krishna says in the beginning that I have already killed them. I'm just giving the
credit. You want to give the credit to Arjuna? He didn't want to hog the show for himself. So then, you know, it probably wouldn't have been about it if that was the case. Leela. So the performance of Leela. And basically to instruct us. Right?
I think it can also be said that basically they have misbehaved with Arjuna and their family. So
yeah.
They will have to react.
Yeah.
So Krishna doesn't want to step in and react for them, but he's teaching them that this is how you behave. He's instructing us.
There is
you have the independence to act.
Yeah.
You have to act.
There is an answer to that question, but I don't know exactly what it is. Why? Krishna, you know, there's surely an anecdote that explains why Krishna didn't fight.
It also takes a vow that he'll not handle any weapon.
Yeah, he took the vow.
Because he was, they were, both sides were friends of Krishna's, right?
Yes.
Both were friends, both were relatives. And so I said, I won't fight on anybody's side. It wouldn't be fair. But I will be the chariot. Krishna's telling you, I'll fight, but I will become Arjuna's charioteer. But which is, Arjuna and the Pandavas are thinking, great, Krishna's on our side, no worries. There was a choice. And Duryodhana wanted Krishna's army. But the Pandavas wanted Krishna. Because they knew, if we've got Krishna, then, well, there's no problem.
No worries, mate.
Let's get on with the fight. Any action. Although, actually, it wasn't quite like that, because Arjuna is sitting there, he's now crying, and he's dropped his bow. It's looking a bit precarious for the Pandavas at the moment. Arantapadas means, he's the destroyer of the enemies, and he's now dropped his bow and he's crying on his chariot. Alright, okay, I didn't put up any homework, but you can still do the two questions that are in your workbooks. And I've got a busy...